So you believe that having children gives humans a sense of immortality, do you?
It is a reasonable explanation to your query, sir.
And to yours as well, Data.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, fanning himself after a big shootout in the Wild West.
And we have a very special guest, just shedding her old age, really bad old age makeup, Geneva Orton.
Thank you. Hello.
I got your name right this time.
Yes, you did. Geneva.
Yeah. Familiar voice to some listeners out there. Geneva, last time you were on the show, it was the Birthright Parts 1 and 2 two-parter.
Yes. Very exciting two-parter.
Was it?
No.
No, it was pretty boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt bad about that. Cam and I, we were like, we need to get Jenna back for a more exciting two-parter. Mm-hmm. We tried to make it happen. Scheduling did not work out with regards to Way of the Warrior, another Worf-centric two-parter on Deep Space Nine.
We tried to get her back to do a hairdos episode.
That didn't work out so much either. I don't know, but before we jump into this week's conundrum, Jenna, do you recall watching the Worf two-part episode? Or I guess it wasn't a two-part episode. It was a feature-length episode, essentially.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Do you remember watching that with me, like, way back in the day? Like, when Worf first comes on Deep Space Nine?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. That was another exciting reason to have you back. But we had another great guest. That was a Brett Orton. He had a lot of great quips. So, yeah, we're keeping it all in the family here. Cam, what is our conundrum this week, though?
We are going to talk about the many faces of Brent Spiner.
Wow.
I know.
Cam, what...
Happy, sad, confused, perplexed.
It's like one of those Rorschach tests, essentially. Yeah, you know, just what makes you feel, Brent? Act it out, sir.
It's a cornucopia of expressions.
I love it. Okay.
Yes.
But, you know, if we get down to business, Cam, which I want to do right now, but essentially we want to examine this guy. He's known Jenna, of course, as Mr. Data, mm-hmm. you do recall, but he... It's not that's not his only performance in Star Trek.
No, there's a lot of actors who show up on Star Trek in multiple roles. You know, Jeffrey Combs, Von Armstrong. But Brent Spiner is like the all-star one. He's the one that all the fans know. And I think what we're going to do today is talk about each of his creations outside of Data. We've talked about Data, you know, to death already. But we're going to talk about his other side creations and... talk about how well they work as characters, what he brings to them, and are they anywhere near as iconic as, you know, his central one, Data?
Yeah. Well, and I think the curious thing, we'll go through it, but like all these other characters that he portrays, they're all tied to Data.
Yes.
In a way. In some ways more interesting than others. But
right.
Cam, why don't we get into it? Why don't we just start at the beginning? I guess the one that we have to go to here, first of all, is Lore. Of course, Data's android brother here.
Yes.
Jenna, do you recall growing up watching Lore on television? No, Data's
absolutely.
Evil brother?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So, Cam, when we first meet him in Data Lore, what did you initially make of this Lore character and how Brent Spiner differentiated his performance to make it clear that this was not just your average Data bot sort of dude?
I remember when I started watching TNG, and the first, you know, the season one is a nightmare.
Sure.
It's just a screaming nightmare.
Shut up, Wesley.
But the first, you know, handful of episodes I was watching going like, oh my God, like, what am I watching? This was, I think, the first one that I really got into. And that I really enjoyed the character of Lore. He actually has some menace to him. And he's an interesting opposite for Data. I mean, it's the very obvious, you know, mirror character, mirror villain. But I think Spiner is really genius in this, in that Lore feels different.
It's very different on the surface level from like the facial tics.
Yeah.
But I think it takes a good actor to actually convince you that it's not just you know, Data doing a bad impression of a bad robot.
Right, or Data, you know, in different clothing.
Yeah. And this, like, I buy it as, like, a fully nuanced, realized, kind of menacing character there. What do you make of Lore, the evil brother, Jen?
Oh, I completely agree. I'm trying to think.
Do you have experience with evil brothers?
No, multiple evil brothers.
Okay.
Oh gosh, I've completely lost my train of thought, but I was trying to think of someone else from television or even movies that has played. It's basically you're just watching that person play a different character.
And maybe with a goatee on.
Yeah, and it's goofy and campy and not very entertaining. And watching these Data episodes that you sent me to watch, and him.
I thought you just watched them through, like, randomly through your own volition, and it just happened to line up with our topic. It was serendipity. But
what are the chances?
Yeah.
He actually becomes these completely other characters, and you get lost in those other characters without even really thinking that you're watching the same person play someone else completely different.
One of the things here, just Spiner has a way with a smarm.
Yeah.
He just, like, just this delivery that I would never describe Data as smarmy in any sort of way.
Right.
But the way that he just unleashes it with Lore, I'm like, wow, that guy's got a talent.
Brent Spiner also likes to play campy. Like, you can just tell he's a bit of a ham.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I like about Lore, though, is that he's containing it in this episode, Data Lore. Like, the character has menace. He's not going fully goofy, which I think we'll maybe talk a little more about later. But in this episode, to me, Lore is scary because he seems to have the insights and intelligence of Data, but with that extra level of madness.
Well, let's dive into maybe what's driving the performance as well. Because one of the things that always bugs me when I'm watching, you know, film or TV is when I don't understand the motivation of the character. And Lore, I actually do think that he has, it's not necessarily a motivation that I would, you know, agree with. But I understand.
Why not?
Well, I feel my creator has wronged me, so I'm going to make sure I wipe out the colony he lives on.
With my homie, the crystalline entity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do understand. He sells me on his motivation, though. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's... Jen, don't you agree? If you're watching a movie, villains that are evil for the sake of being evil, I get so bored watching them.
Kevin Spacey's Lex in that Superman movie.
Superman Returns. Cam loves that Lex.
That's a Lex where you don't really understand his motivation.
Real estate.
In comparison to Lore. I also, the way he moves is like Lore. He moves as if he's menacing. And you just kind of buy into the whole thing. The body language and his expressions and...
Believe me,
angry he is.
I never want to get kicked in the head by that android. Like, that looks like it would hurt.
Yeah, and like, Tyler, you've watched the original series episode, The Enemy Within.
Yes.
Which, you know...
Yes, I have.
Compare the good and the bad Kirks to the two, you know, Data and Lore. The level of depth to the relationship with the Data and Lore is just so much richer and more interesting. I mean, this was the last episode, I believe, that Roddenberry wrote. And... Again, Roddenberry loved revisiting things that, you know, ideas he'd had over and over again.
Oh, and I can tell Roddenberry wrote this one because he's giving Riker lines like, all your parts, Data. It's like, you dog, you.
Well, Roddenberry loved writing his sexual fantasies into the episodes. And
what fantasy was this?
Maybe. Well, he himself, I think, perceives himself as Riker. Okay. So...
This
I don't want to know.
Weird, Cam.
I don't know. You know what? I think I made you lose your train of thought. I apologize for interrupting, but go on.
No, but just the level, like, you would agree, like, the level of depth going on in this episode versus what we saw with Kirk, you know, the two dueling Kirks. Like, in that episode, did you feel that the two Kirks felt like really interesting personalities on their own?
No, not at all. I thought that, quote unquote, good Kirk, I couldn't get behind him because he was so, like, feckless. And then evil Kirk was just an evil. Rapist. You know, why? Because it made him feel better about himself. Like, I didn't really...
It was very one-dimensional.
Yes.
If one-dimensional. Maybe half a dimension.
I don't know. Cam, that has to be one of my top or bottom five Star Trek episodes of all time, and just how...
In the franchise or in the original series?
In TOS.
I might have to argue that one.
In how objectionable the enemy within is. Right. Just as an awful, awful piece of media. Anyway, sorry. Spiner, though, I think he gets the nuance of the character in a way that maybe Shatner didn't display.
Yes.
Like, I think Shatner went a little too hammy. But even though I think it's correct to say that Spiner does like the ham.
I think there was more on the page for him to work with, too, sure. Obviously. And it's interesting, this was sort of a bit of an afterthought. Originally, the lore was going to be a female love interest for Data. And it was Spiner that pitched it as an evil twin.
Okay.
Maybe he didn't want to wear a dress.
You think that's what was in the cards there?
Yeah, they were going to dress Brent Spiner up as his female love interest, obviously.
I would have done that for cosplay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the... He did wear a dress in...
He did later...
Something we'll talk about later on. So it must not have been that, Cam.
No.
Stay tuned.
No, I think that's, you know, I'm sure it's more expensive to shoot like it this way with like Brent Spiner doing the split screen. But
yeah.
I think it was for the best. And I will complain about this, though. I mean, they were telegraphing it from the start that Lore was the evil twin.
Right.
You have like the menacing musical cues playing.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know.
I was confused the whole time.
Yeah. It was a complete twist when it turned out that he was evil and he figured out where the off switch is. What do you think, Jen, if you were an android and you had an off switch, would you keep it secret too, just like he did from keep it from Beverly until he needed to show it to her?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah, absolutely. Would you do anything different?
Would
you have one person that knows?
Well, you know what? So this actually came up in our Who's the Ultimate Star Trek Fighter podcast.
Yes.
In which other characters had to figure out how to turn Data off. And would they be able to figure out where his off switch is? And would they get to it before he could stop them?
Mm-hmm.
So this is not the first time Beverly actually used Data's off switch, though. So he's used to good effect, I think, in... what was it, Cam? Was it Conundrum or Clues? I'm forgetting. It was not Conundrum. Anyway.
Yeah.
But what would you do, Tyler? Would somebody know?
I would have would I even need one person to know? Yeah, I'm sure my GP, yeah, why not? I'd have to have, you know, do no harm, so.
One thing I felt really undercuts the episode of Data Lore, though, is that the performance is so strong, but Starfleet is portrayed as so inept in this episode. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, Lore went crazy. He's just laying on the ground. No one's looking at him. You know, they're just like, okay. And Wesley's the only one that can figure this out. Even though the Data doesn't know basic commands from Picard, he's like, pardon me, when he says, make it so. And like, no, just ignore the robot on the ground in that room.
Now, Jen, with regards to Starfleet's, I don't know, ineptitude, what do you think of them constantly questioning the loyalty of Data throughout this episode?
Well, it interesting, especially because of the order that I watched these various episodes in, and things that happened where they didn't really question his loyalty or call him on it as much.
Yeah.
To then go back and see this one when they did. I just chalked it up to being an early season, to be honest.
Yeah, what did you think of an early season episode like this? Some unintentional comedy abound for you, or
was it
just kind of painful at times?
It was to be expected. It was painful, but to be expected, because since they've been on Netflix, I've been watching some of the earlier ones.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Wow. Like Code of Honor and Justice and Angel One, all the fan favorites?
Yeah, just random mix, to be honest. Oh, so yeah. it was pretty goofy, but...
Okay. Cam, Picard and Yar having
we need to do like a greatest hits of Yar at some point my God.
I feel Denise Crosby is completely justified wanting out of the show after that one season. But like that, her questioning whether Data is going to be loyal to the crew and then Picard saying, but just for everyone to know, that is a legitimate security question. He might as well just put his hands on his hips and then like look right at the camera there. It's just so camp, like 1980s television.
I just didn't understand why that was such a controversial question for her to be asking. She's a security officer. Like, isn't that her job?
Well, and it's weird because like Picard already brought it up in the... Data actually brought it up in the ready room because he knew Picard wanted to ask.
Yeah.
And so it had been settled there, but... Then the writers want to bring it up again in the episode?
Right.
I don't know. But with regards to Spiner's performance and all of this. Yes. Lore menacing. I dig his motivation. Well, not I dig it, but like I...
No, you love it.
I understand it. I can grasp it. We do see an evolution of Lore, though, and I think it's important that we jump into the episode Brothers. Now, Jen, was this an episode, like, I asked you to watch it. Do you remember watching this, like, way back in the day? I'm not sure if you watched Data Lore, you know, like, back in the early 90s.
Yeah, I definitely didn't remember Brothers.
Oh, okay. Like even with Dr. Soong and everything?
No.
Okay, so it must have been like Descent that you, that's the Borg episode Lore's featured in that you would have been remembering. But Cam, do you notice maybe a little bit of a difference in how Lore's portrayed between Data Lore and Brothers?
A big difference.
Yeah. Well, what's behind
this? I watched them actually in reverse order. So I watched Brothers first. And I did not appreciate how campy Lore was played in this episode. I really prefer the 1987 or 88 more kind of smooth and more sinister Lore of Data Lore. This one, I felt he was going big, really big.
Well, a lot of it has to be on the page, though, right?
Oh, of course.
Because I'm just wondering if...
And same director, wasn't it?
The same director, Rob Bowman. Yeah. So what happened in between I don't know, maybe 2 years floating around in space and then having to live with the Packleds? Who wouldn't blame somebody for going a little stir crazy if you're with the Packleds?
Was it just that he was being driven insane? Like, it was Lore's wiring just getting more and more loose every time he popped up?
I think that was kind of one of the issues that Soong had with him, is that he was an imperfect, you know, model here. And so maybe he, like, his systems were degrading or somehow, but he's so much hammier, you know, just with, like, Data saying, you know, I'm not less perfect than Lore, and then Lore following up going, I'm not less perfect than Lore. It's just like...
Yeah.
It sounds very much like... You're waiting for, like, the studio audience to, like, laugh and, like, clap their hands after that line delivery.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Jen, did you notice much of a difference between the two portrayals of Lore, between Brothers and Data Lore?
No.
Okay. Same Lore. Okay. But did he... Okay, so obviously this version of Lore still has a propensity towards violence, but did he seem as menacing to you, or
he did seem goofier?
Yeah,
like he was definitely goofier, a little bit less controlled.
Yeah, that's what I like the first time in Data Lore, is he does seem controlled.
Yeah, more intentional.
He's got the glitch in that, you know, his artificial emotions are obviously what spells sort of his downfall, but he seems to be, you know, like Data, very together, and it's only the little ticks that give him away. Whereas I don't think Lore could ever pass his Data in Brothers,
like just the really?
I don't know. Okay. I mean,
he did with regards to the creator.
That's,
you know,
true.
Like Soong, like, thought
Soong
it
was old and had to, like,
maybe he couldn't
senile.
See properly. Well, one of the little, okay, if we're talking about like Spiner's performance, so one of the little things, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Brothers, probably like 6 or 7.
Oh, really?
Like, you know, I mean, I
this was your favorite as a child. You just watched it on a loop.
No, but I would have seen it a whole bunch of times as a kid, and then like the intermediate periods, and then like I've watched it twice over the last year and a half, I think.
Right.
But did you notice the subtle wink that Lore shot at Data right before he would have deactivated Data to get the emotion chip installed?
Yes.
I look, 6-7 times watching this is the first time I ever actually noticed that little subtle wink that he shot Data. So it's like, I'm sure that was on the page.
Yeah.
But that's an impressive wink that Brent Spiner pulled off.
Right. No, I agree very much. Like, it's the little moments that I appreciate that Spiner brings to these characters, because that's what makes them feel real. You know, that was the issue, you know, going back to the enemy within with Shatner. Like, it's all big. It's all just kind of going hammy. Whereas what I think Spiner brings to the characters he plays is subtlety. Even when he's being hammy, there's those little moments like the wink that... If he didn't have those, I don't think I would like the Lore in Brothers at all.
Okay.
I think I would just be like, this was a, you know, silly episode.
Well, you know, okay, look, we're talking about Lore.
Yeah.
If we're talking about Brothers, why don't we bring up Dr. Soong, though? I remember as a kid, I had no idea that that was played by Brent Spiner.
Right.
Like, it was a revelation to me when I was, like, older. I was like, that's the same actor.
You're like, that's not what old people look like?
I just assume it was, like, some other actor that they hired and put in, like, really bad makeup or something.
He looks like Yogurt from Spaceballs.
That's true. Yeah, we should have gotten like Mel Brooks in that role.
Like merchandising.
Wow. Geneva, though, what'd you think of, so we see, okay, I think it's easy for, you know, Brent Spiner to go play, you know, good android, bad android. Now he's got a play a guy who's kind of somewhere in the middle. He's the creator of both these androids. What did you think of Noonien Soong with regards to Brent Spiner's portrayal here.
Again, I thought it was impressive. He completely becomes a different person, and you buy it entirely.
Yeah, for me, I think with Soong, what I really appreciate is the vocal performance. Very often, Brent Spiner's voices, I just don't think he has a versatile vocal ability.
Sure.
But I think this is kind of him, the best he can do doing a different type of voice where it completely works and does not sound like Data.
It kind of has, did you get a little bit of Edward G. Robinson in there? Like,
Shay.
Well, yeah, he's going to hear my boys. You're both back. You see?
A little bit. Yeah, he definitely has that sort of bit of a drawl.
Sure.
To me, the character falls apart, though, with the makeup. It falls apart. I am watching this freak show, Wax Museum, escapee on screen. And, like, I'm sitting there going, like, is he human? Like, what is this thing?
Well, yeah, you know, I thought he was an alien at first. The first time I saw this episode, I
just thought he was really old. How old is he?
Well, that's a great question.
Do you remember in the third Indiana Jones when the bad guy drinks from the wrong cup?
Yes.
And then, like, ages drastically? He looks like that guy. So, I mean, how old was that guy around that point? Maybe 180?
Yeah.
So, maybe Dr. Soong is somewhere in there?
Well, okay. Who looks older, Soong or Admiral McCoy?
Oh.
Because that could kind of put things in perspective.
I think Soong looks older. McCoy looks human.
So McCoy would have been, what, about 120, 130 when we saw him in Encounter at Farpoint?
Yes.
So, I don't know. Are we dealing, Geneva, with a 150-year-old scientist?
I think so. I think that's believable.
Maybe that's just what people look like at that age. Okay.
And I wasn't surprised to hear he was dying.
You know, I like how everyone was shocked. They're like... Lore's like, you're dying?
It's like, really? Yes. You couldn't tell?
We're all dying. It's like, to me, I rolled my eyes and was just like, yeah, we're all dying. It's like, yeah, thank you, sir. Yeah.
We needed a scene of him singing Young at Heart.
And like twirling an umbrella. Yeah.
He has such a, like, awful end where, you know, like Laura like throws him across a room.
Yeah, it's an android old man fight.
Yeah, but it shows Data, you know, cradling Dr. Soong, and they're like, well, we gotta go. And I'm like, he's not like, he's dying, but he's not like fading in this moment. Like, are they just leaving this man on the floor while they beam out of there? Like, well, I'm sure he'll go in a day or two.
I would like to think that they beamed him up, but maybe Beverly didn't have the facilities because they're all being used up by, Willie Potts? So there's no room in sick pay for any more patients, so they just left him there.
Like, what is the reasoning that they aren't doing everything they can to get this guy up and running?
I think Riker looked...
Okay, let's be honest. He's never going to be running. But.
No. Riker probably looked at him and he was able to evaluate, oh, that man's dying. Yeah.
Yeah, like, did it soon work for you on an emotional level? Because a lot of this episode is about a father-son relationship. We're supposed to be invested in the feelings of Dr. Soong. Did any of that work for you?
On an emotional level, I'm far more invested in what Data's journey was in this. Soong is hard to... say that I legit care about him or I'm legit invested in him. But again, when we talk about motivation, I understand his motivation for all the things that he did. And right. I think that he's being sincere when he's talking to Lore and saying, look, my intention was to go back and fix you, which Lore seems to be a little offended by, but you know, it happens. But I agree with you. Like if the makeup job was better, Yeah. I think this would have been a stronger performance, but I think there's only so much Brent Spiner can do with what he was given.
Well, you say Brent Spiner. Originally, Spiner was not supposed to play this role. It was supposed to be an actor named Key Luke.
Oh, yeah.
Who was an Asian actor. And I guess they decided to save money? I don't know. It's interesting because Brothers originally, Key Luke was going to play Dr. Soong, and Laura was not in it. Which would have taken away some of the drama, I think.
Yeah. All right.
But Laura was added a little later. And, you know, do you think...
Spiner was just concerned he wasn't getting enough screen time.
Yeah,
I'll play all the characters.
Yeah, but do you think the impact would have been different with a... You know, there's an uncanny valley stuff going on with Dr.
Sure,
Soong, right?
Yeah.
Would it have worked better with a human actor? Human, as in Brent Spiner isn't human.
Yeah.
An actor that looks human?
Yeah. That's tough because I think it's still such an iconic performance.
Yes.
You know, like people know that episode, they know that character, you know. So would it have worked better? I don't know, because I suspect that, like, no, the other actor just would not have brought the gravitas that Spiner had, you know?
Right. I just wonder if it would have worked emotionally a little stronger, because Spiner would be acting off another actor as opposed to kind of more of a stand-in.
Sure. Do you know what I think? Jen, what do you think of this pitch here? Instead of giving him, like, taking him on with tons of makeup, make Dr. Soong, like, I don't know, 50 years old as opposed to 150 years old? What if just a few gray streaks and just, you know, some bags under his eyes or something like that? Would that work a little bit better for you?
I was fine with it. I think it was Cam that had the problem.
Oh, wow.
No, but like I didn't really mind the makeup. I thought, oh, he's just really old. So it didn't really bother me at all.
But did it look like good makeup?
No, but you know.
Yeah.
It's not 2017 when they were putting it together, so.
It's true. I mean, and even now, you know, you see things like J. Edgar.
Wow.
Equally awful. But I would have loved to have seen, you know, watching this episode especially, I really began to wonder, like, was Brent Spiner born in the wrong era? Like, what is Brent Spiner like in an era of mocap? Where
is he like the new Andy Serkis?
Like, maybe.
Yeah.
He's definitely got, you know, the physicality for those types of performances. But he's so limited by the fact, well, we can't have him recognizable. Bury him in makeup.
Do you think that's what they wanted to do? Like, just, like, make him unrecognizable but somewhat recognizable? Like, did they want people to clue into the fact that Brent Spiner was playing Dr. Soong? Because as a kid, I had no idea.
I think, that's a good question. I think,
because why bury him in that much makeup?
I would say part of it has to do with just the practicality of shooting the episode. You can easily put a stand-in in that makeup and no one can tell the difference.
Sure.
So
okay.
It does make it easier for shooting conditions.
Yeah.
Because
look, I'm sure Brent Spiner's regular stand-in was already doubling as Lore.
Right.
So then you need to get a third guy, get somebody to hunch over or something like that.
Right.
So,
do you think that Spiner got a bigger paycheck for this episode?
No, I don't think
so. You don't think so?
No.
That's sad.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm sure he is well paid for his entire run here. Why don't we segue into, we'll keep on the Dr. Soong thread, but Jen, you missed it a few months ago, but we did get to see a young Dr. Soong in Birthright Part 1.
Right.
I do appreciate, this is actually a distinct performance from what we saw Old Man Soong versus Young Man Soong, though. Like, he seemed more of an idealistic sort of dreamer in that programming that he embedded in Data's system.
Right. Yes. This is, when Data's having the dreams.
Yep.
And I'm curious, did you feel like when you see often in Star Trek characters will pop up later and there's like an excitement factor with it? Were you excited to see Soong again?
No, I honestly.
Okay.
Do you mean.
You get that sort of tingle of fan excitement? Like, oh my God, it's my fan favorite character coming back, you know? The way we feel when Vedic Barayal pops up.
First time I watched it, I just kind of shrugged.
Right.
I guess when we watched it a few months back, I was just like, oh yeah, that's great. I had forgotten about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about the fact that these seem like two entirely different characters. Like Old Man Soong versus Young Man Soong, right?
Yes.
But do you think Spiner, Was he trying to pull, okay, because he did the old man performance first.
Yes.
Was he pulling any inspiration from that when he portrayed Young Man Soong?
I often wonder, in a case like this, with an actor who's shooting 26 episodes a season, you know, memorizing scripts every couple days.
Yeah.
When he gets the script for Birthright Part 1, is he like, oh, Soong, like, is he going back and researching his old work? Or is it like, yeah, I think I can kind of remember how that went. That's the question, and I don't have an answer to it, but, you know, like, if you're a film actor, and they're like, we would like you to reprise a role, you've got kind of the luxury of time that a TV actor does not.
Sure. Okay. What about this? Star Trek has an interesting track record when it comes to portrayals of races.
Interesting?
Well... Soong, like, clearly meant to be, like, an Asian character.
Right.
You know, Ki Luke was hired to portray him. His name is Noonien Soong, and that, like, Gene Roddenberry, he had Khan Noonien Singh, you know, again, a man of Hispanic origin portraying a man of South Asian descent.
Right. And yeah, they were both named after a man named Kim Noonien Wong that Gene Roddenberry met in World War II.
So, like, he was clearly meant to be Asian characters. But then yes. Birthright confirms that he's Caucasian.
Look, let's just thank God they didn't do like a Mickey Rooney okay. in Breakfast at Tiffany's okay. with Brent Spiner.
No yeah. kidding.
That okay. would have been real uncomfortable.
You wouldn't be able to talk about the episode.
Yeah.
Hashtag problematic.
All right. Well, look, we've got our... any final thoughts on Soong?
Well, just what the name. Do you think it was a little ridiculous to name two characters after the same man?
Yes.
Because it is confusing. Like, what were they thinking?
No, especially for me, because I've messed up their names on the podcast yeah. before. Because, I don't know, I think, wasn't Gene Roddenberry trying to find the man, like, hoping the guy would recognize the name and reach out to Gene Roddenberry or something?
So he just kept naming more characters after him?
I think that's so. Look, this is some little factoid I read, like, 20 years ago, so I'm likely mistaken here.
He's like, this guy's gonna be really into the episode Brothers because we were brothers in World War II, man.
Yeah, and he's like, he's gonna be happy that I portrayed him as a 150-year-old hunchback.
Like, barely recognizable as human.
Yeah. who likes to play with T-Rexes for some reason.
Did you notice, what was that?
Yeah, he's playing with a lot of T-Rexes, and then did you know that Willie Potts had them by the end of the episode?
Okay.
So, like, did Worf swipe those T-Rex toys from, like, the clutches of Noonien Soong and take them back on the ship?
Okay. I wasn't going to bring this up. I was going to let Willie Potts slide by. But, you know, this episode, obviously, yes, Noonien Soong is the predominant character in the episode, his relationship with Data. But it is also an episode called Brothers. It's about Data and Lore.
Yeah.
How did the paralleling of these two kids work for you guys?
Yeah, a little on the nose, wouldn't you say, Geneva?
Because in case listeners don't remember, it's two kids. One has pulled a prank on the other and landed the other one in the hospital.
But it wasn't even the prank that landed him in the hospital. He pulled a prank on him, and then he ran off and ate some poisonous berries. Yeah, that's on him.
I like, you know, Riker's really giving it to the kid.
I love that scene.
But because your brother's an idiot.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't think the kid did anything that wrong. Like, I thought it was a kind of funny prank.
Geneva, I have to know, when you guys were young, how many times did Tyler run away and eat poisonous berries?
Every time I pretended that he killed me, he ran away and ate poisonous berries. And it was always his fault.
They called it the Orton maneuver.
But do you remember as a kid you would like play dead, you know, like maybe a sibling like pushed you and you go oh and then like play dead
we
or
didn't
whatever?
Really do that. We would do a lot of like jump out of like spaces at each other, like try and scare the crap out of each other.
But did you ever play dead after being scared?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but you and I would have done this,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you ever, for an instance, buy that we are dead?
No, of course not. Yeah. and then in response, run off and eat poisonous berries. It makes no sense. You're so upset that your brother's dead, you're going to eat poisonous berries?
Why is the little kid not in therapy after this?
I don't know.
Troy should have been looking after him. Like, why did you feel compelled to eat poisonous berries? Listen, Juliet.
But what about the parents? Like, Riker's like, yeah, your parents are on sabbatical, so they left you on the ship.
Who was looking after them?
And for all we know at this point, the child is still dying.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite critical that they get him some, you know, additional medical help, and the parents are still off on sabbatical.
Was Neelix's cousin looking after them?
Yes. They went to, Naomi Wildman's daycare?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess was the idea at the end, the brothers forgive each other because they're brothers, and that's what Data was told, he's now supposed to forgive Lore.
Right.
Not a lot
as
of
if
subtext.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
Like, did this emotion...
Yeah, you murdered my father versus you ate poison berries.
Well, this episode is written by Rick Berman.
Yeah.
Was this something that happened with the Berman brothers back when they were young?
Yes. There's a lot of poison berry issues.
That's a question if he ever shows up at a con.
He was actually... he was on Twitter last year saying that he was going to show up for the 50th, and he never did.
He did.
I kind of wish he'd... I think maybe they're just the fans would have just been too abusive towards Berman.
Probably.
So.
But no, to me, like, the emotional core of the episode with Data and Mr. Soong... I'll call him Mr. You know...
He didn't go to Android Medical School for 10 years just to be called Mr. Soong. It's Dr. Soong to you.
Sorry, Dr. Soong. Yeah. But the emotional core of Data, Dr. Soong, and Lore... to me, is strong enough that I'm like, this B story about the kids just feels kind of, it's campy. Like, it's goofy to me.
Okay, but let's just say this, though. I think the whole lead up with Data taking over the ship, that's one of the most badass sequences ever in Star Trek,
that was
though.
Super cool.
Yeah.
But that was what I was saying. I watched that first, and the whole time, they're trying to figure out, okay, what is Data doing? What is Data doing?
Yeah.
So then, they weren't really questioning his loyalty at that point.
Yeah.
They were just kind of, what the heck is going on?
Well, Tasha Yar wasn't there.
Yeah.
Fair.
She was really the stick in the mud when it came to Data.
Yeah. But it was pretty badass.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
that code that he just, it was
1-4-7-10-9-8-7-7-alphabet-it-now. Yeah, like
I hadn't seen this episode in a while. Like, my memories of it were really just Dr. Soong.
Okay.
But
you were dreaming of it. You couldn't get it out of your head.
I know.
Well, it was dreaming, trust me. They weren't nightmares. but, you know, I'm watching this episode, and there's all this lead up with Data taking over the ship, and I'm riveted on the edge of my seat, and I'm remembering that Dr. Soong is in this episode, but I can't remember the logistics as to how he comes into the story. And this buildup is so spectacular that then when it kind of cuts to like 40 minutes of Data in like a hut with Dr. Soong and Laura, I was like, wow, what a weird buildup for this episode.
They could have done something really cool with that.
They did. Yeah. He tapped his head and rubbed his belly and whistled Pop Goes the Weasel.
And no one ever thought he could do that.
Yeah.
Which was impressive that Brent Spiner could do that, apparently.
I could do it.
Can you? I don't think I could.
Okay, let me do it.
I'll narrate here. Tyler is attempting to do it on the podcast. Wow. He is actually doing it. Wow. I don't even know if I could do Pop the Weasel with whistling.
Well done, Tyler.
This is going on the best of. This will be on our best of episode at the end of the year, guys. Don't worry.
Is Tyler an Android? Write it in and let us know. Subspace Transmission.
I've never been so proud as your sister.
No, but you know what? My girlfriend says that I'm emotionally vacant as well. So there you go. So I could be in need of an emotion chip.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is taking a sad turn.
What do you think of... I never really got the whole installing the emotion chip on Lore, because he seemed like a much more emotional sort of android.
Right.
He was... Okay. Maybe I misinterpreted, but Soong said that he had basic emotional programming or something, or that he was just mimicking these...
I think he had basic emotional programming.
Okay. But so then when he installs this more complex emotion chip... Lore just, his programming was never meant to have it. And is that why he killed his creator? Is that not, that's, you know, if you look through literature, that's one of kind of the mankind's kind of psychological fantasies, is like destroying your creator.
And yes.
You know, is this just very a much kind of on the nose reference to all that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what do you think about Lore not being able to handle emotions, Jen? Do you understand that? Yeah, does he seem like an emotionally stable dude to you?
Oh, of course not.
No?
No, I wasn't surprised.
Okay.
That he couldn't handle it. He seems like a crazy person anyway.
Yeah.
So. What do you think of the idea that he was too perfect, so they had to redesign, you know, an android to be more artificial, essentially?
That's a very intriguing concept. You brought up the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
I think that's a totally legit concern, you know? But then you're... essentially subjecting Data to a life of never, quote-unquote, feeling as if he's, you know, capable of reaching that goal, which is to be fully human.
Right.
Does Data reach that by the time you get to Star Trek Nemesis, Cam? Does he become fully human?
I guess.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sure. He's singing... Irvin Washington songs.
Well, it's like they kind of backtrack Data a bit by the time you get to Insurrection and Nemesis. I don't feel like the end journey is in that one. I feel like the end journey is more First Contact.
Yeah, maybe even Generations.
Yeah.
Because he turns his emotion chip off in First Contact.
Right, yeah.
But then, then the Borg Queen, she figures out how to turn it on.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
And then on that note, let's move on to the next episode.
Yes. What's next in, is it A Fistful of Datas?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Jen, what did you think of this? This, of course, for anyone who doesn't remember, and I don't know why you don't remember Worf and Alexander on the holodeck with Durango Troy, playing shoot 'em up in the old or the ancient West. As
you
they
have
call
to
it.
Get that Durango Troy action figure.
Okay, I'll. You know, I've got Jen. I don't think you know this, but I do have Sheriff Worf and Deputy Alexander.
I have seen those.
Have you?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Had you seen this episode before?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and I remembered it. I love the holodeck. I think I've told you guys that
before.
Oh,
really?
I get really excited about any episode.
Gene Roddenberry
of the
would love you.
Yeah, it's just so much fun. I like anything that is parallel universe or time travel or anything related to that. I'll watch the worst movies and television shows ever if it's connected to that at all.
Yeah.
And the holodeck sort of speaks to me in that way.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of I had holodeck episodes. You can be assured of that.
Excellent. Well, Excellent. I remembered that and I enjoyed it just as much this time. I love Alexander at that age. He's so cute. And then they go off on their little adventure and...
Father, will you play with me, Father?
No.
Isn't Worf like the worst father ever, though, Jen?
Well, no, he makes up for it at the end. He is sort of a terrible father. He's trying to get out of even hanging out with his son.
Yes.
And Picard's having none of it.
How much pain must Worf feel that he's trying to find work for him to do on his day off that he doesn't want to hang out with his own son? Like, that's, to me, is just sad.
It was pretty sad.
Yeah.
You don't have young ones, Tyler. One day you two will be like, I just want to go out and leave the house for a while.
They'll all have to refer to me as father.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be adamant.
So, Brent Spiner.
Anyways,
in this episode,
sorry.
This is a showcase for Brent Spiner.
Oh, yeah.
To really camp it up. Like, holodeck episodes are basically free reign to just go nuts. And we get to see him play, you know, a Wild West outlaw. What did you guys think of him as, I guess, the Wild West outlaw? Who's
Frank Hollander?
Yeah, who's kind of the main character.
Okay, we go back to the menacing thing. I actually buy him as a menacing character, which is interesting. You see, in all these, like, you know, Old West movies, sometimes they kind of fall into that kind of like cliched, you know, black-hatted villain sort of, you know, trope. And this, I actually buy Spiner with mustache and all as like a kind of a scary dude that you would not want to mess with. Were you frightened that the holodeck safeties were off?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially for poor little Alexander.
Well, I don't know.
Just trying to hang out with his dad.
Yeah. I mean, what about when Frank Hollander grabbed Worf by the shoulder? And Worf yelped out in pain. Mm-hmm. You know, that tells you things are getting nasty.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
But, Cam, what do you make of Frank Hollander?
It's funny, you know, when you say evil Data on the holodeck as a cowboy, my reaction is not like, boy, that sounds scary. But it works in the same way I think, like, Biff Tannen works in Back to the Future 3 when you see Mad Dog. We've seen this character be really goofy the first two movies, but the actor pulls it off. Like,
see, I thought you were going to bring up old man makeup again.
Oh, no.
If we're talking about this.
And that's actually, I didn't want to bring it up, but we were talking about old man makeup before. I remembered what it was that I was thinking about watching that episode, and it was Marty McFly.
Right.
Old Marty McFly.
Right.
And how it's just Michael J. Fox again. You don't buy it. You don't believe it. You don't see it as a different character. You see, and I love Back to the Future. I'm obsessed.
Oh, yes.
But you just see Michael J. Fox now with old man makeup.
For listeners that don't know this, Back to the Future literally takes place on your birthday and birth year, does it not, Jen?
It does. Well, the day that they go back in time.
October
26, 1985. The present day when they go back in time for the first time and Marty McFly's in the DeLorean. October 26, 1985, my day and year of birth.
Were you incredibly frustrated with all those memes that were, you know, going out? Like, everybody's just like, it is now officially the day that you go back. You know, you see it on Facebook.
Who are these people talking
about? No, you know,
like
on Facebook, they're like, for like 10 years, there's all these memes showing up. And it's like, really? No, it's not the day yet, guys.
I like your impression of them. That's all I'm saying.
No, I was quite happy. It's my birthday.
Yeah.
But
Samuel Clemens, what Jenna doesn't know is whenever you bring up Samuel Clemens on the podcast, we all have to do Samuel Clemens voices. Cameron?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Geneva, do you remember Samuel Clemens from Time's Arrow Parts 1 and 2 in Star Trek Next Generation?
No, absolutely
not. The look of
not.
Horror is very visible here.
She wants to slowly back out of the apartment.
But going back to Back to the Future, the performance of Brent Spiner as this evil cowboy does remind me of Mad Dog in Back to the Future 3 in that they're both ultimately comedic characters, but they have menace and gravity to them. Like, you actually fear for the protagonists having to deal with these villains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but that said, what do you make of Eli Hollander? Frank's kid.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm very curious about this. Do you think that they cast the actor who played Eli first, and then Brent Spiner picked up a performance from that, or do you think Brent Spiner developed this character and then they got an actor who could do that, like, I'm just a yokel who talks like this and I've got a real tough paw?
This really is the episode of a thousand accents.
Thank you. I'm very proud of myself.
No, I do think this episode is probably envisioned fairly early as a Brent Spiner showcase.
So, so would you figure that Brent Spiner developed Eli?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be my guess.
Okay.
But what about the woman?
Oh, that was going to be him. That was, you know, and probably originally everyone else it was different actors in all those roles, except that one was Brent Spiner. No, I think for sure this was going to be a Data character. All of them were going to be Data characters right from the conception. That's my guess.
I just wish we had more time with Data as the hombre. That was kind of...
It's true.
It's too short-lived just getting to see him in that mustache and sombrero for just a moment or two. So
now we have all these different versions of Data on this holodeck. Do they feel like distinct characters to you, or are they more like caricatures?
Well, okay. I'll give it a pass here because it is the holodeck. Mm-hmm. And as Alexander noted, Lieutenant Barclay helped him with the programming here. So even if they do seem a little bit like caricatures, I'm okay with it. It's fine by me. What do you think, Jen, of Data walking around the ship going, I reckon, and using his tricorder and jamming it into a holster like it was a gun?
Yeah, that was a little strange.
Yeah, just a little. Yeah,
a little.
It would catch maybe your commanding officer's attention, right?
Yeah, you would think. I mean, was it the cat that he...
Spot?
Yeah, that was the first time that he started speaking in the accent, I think.
Yeah. I told him to vamoose.
Yeah, and that kind of caught me off guard. I thought, oh God, that's weird.
I actually think this episode would have been, it's not one of my favorites or anything, but I think it would have been a little bit stronger if they kept the comedy in the holodeck. I found those moments outside of the holodeck with Data dropping those lines kind of just awkward.
Sure. What did you make of the fact that Miss Annie Brent Spiner as Miss Annie?
Yeah.
Only gave Worf a hug.
That's a cop out.
I think that was a total cop out.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Is that just like 1992 TV? They're like, no. That's
I think
far.
They're just being like, I don't know. Like, guys, let's be realistic. She would have planted a wet one on Worf.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think, Jen?
I think I'm with Cam that it was 1992, so we probably weren't going to see that on TV.
Like a Michael Dorn and Brent Spiner breaking down barriers.
Yeah, no, it wasn't going to happen in 1992.
That episode of Ellen hadn't aired yet. So.
Yeah, that would be a few, 96, I think.
So I don't think there was the first. I think it was Will and Grace that had the first.
Oh, male
kiss.
Remember Roseanne had that the lesbian kiss,
yes.
And that was before Ellen.
Probably like 93, 94, somewhere in there.
I think so. Yeah. So,
I just think Star Trek, as progressive as its politics often are, what is actually depicted on screen is often a little bit safe. Especially when you get to the TNG era.
And when we were talking about the LGBTQ stuff, yes. And then B, like anything related to any sort of sexuality, it's very prudish. I mean, there are some exceptions, but for the most part, Star Trek, it's... They're not going to bust down barriers with a fistful of Datas. That's for sure.
No, they're definitely, when they're looking at that episode, like, we want it to end with a laugh, not with perhaps some people being offended.
Like, no, and Brent Spiner and drag is not the way to bust down barriers in 1992. I think the LGBTQ community would have been offended.
Yeah, okay. That would have been amazing, though, if that was their platform.
Oh, dear.
So overall, is this like we've talked, you know, about Brent Spiner's other performances? Does Fistful of Data stand up with those other ones, or is it because it's more cartoonish? Do we look at it as more of a minor entry in sort of the Brent Spiner canon?
Yeah, I would call it more of a minor entry. Yeah, it's fun, but I think the lore performance, especially in Data lore, is kind of the highlight so far. Anyway,
right?
What do you figure?
Oh, I would agree. Yeah, I wasn't blown away quite as much by how he completely became these other people.
Right,
Miss Annie. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think partially because they have to be recognizable as Data, so maybe that's part of the limitation too.
Yeah.
Right. So, guys, why don't we segue over to Masks? one of my favorites, right, guys?
Yeah.
So I have to say, I don't know what this episode was.
Well,
I just remember stuff happened.
There's a quote from Ron Moore.
Okay.
And he said, I remember seeing the initial story and saying, Jesus, what is this?
Does that pretty much summarize your thoughts, Jen?
It does. Well, I was really confused throughout the entire episode. And so yeah. on my way over here, I brought up the Wikipedia page just to make sure I hadn't missed anything. And I read on it that it has been frequently voted as the worst episode in The Next Generation ever. So then I realized it wasn't just me.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a little bit of an abstract or obtuse episode.
I'm surprised more people don't dress like Masaka at all the Star Trek conventions.
Masaka is waking. Yeah, like when they're throwing around names like Masaka, Corgano, I-Hat, I'm just like, what is going on in this episode?
Well, and then what? But even just like Data putting on that mask and then like unleashing ninja moves on like the security officers. Yeah. Just like, what?
Yeah. Like, if, for anyone that doesn't remember this classic, it's
classic.
The Enterprise encounters this comet, and kind of hidden within the comet is this library of what is essentially like alien Aztec.
Yeah.
It's like an archive. And it begins to take over the ship, and it channels Data for...
There's about 1,000 alien memories in there of different individuals, and Data comes to embody those individuals.
At least they said, like, 12 personalities are in Data.
No, there's, like, 1,000, but only 12, like, came to the surface.
Yeah. And then the ship is being slowly transformed into this... temple?
Sure.
But there was a swamp, I guess, so I don't know if that's part of the temple. It's just like the landscape of this alien world.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is about them trying to understand the mythology of this universe, which I'm still trying to understand, and communicate with the ruler and bargain for what peace? I don't understand. It just ends with Picard throwing on a mask and talking gibberish.
Yeah. Let's not try to decode this one too hard.
Isn't
let's talk
the
about
fun, though, well, kind of?
Let's talk about Spiner, though.
Right.
I say what you will about this episode and the writing. I did buy Spiner as these different characters. There's kind of that Loki sort of jokester character that we meet.
Right.
There's the guy with the kind of Marlon Brando voice, you know. So, yeah. Spiner's stretching himself here, performance-wise.
And he got this script the night before he shot it.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So there was, like, no preparation for this one.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I bought them. Like, yeah. I definitely was invested in his performance.
Jen, you have not been to the Star Trek conventions where Marina Sirtis complains about the writing in season 7 of Next Generation, and I think this is probably an example of what Marina Sirtis was maybe complaining about here, Cam.
It's gibberish.
Yes,
this
it's
whole
gibberish.
Episode.
It was really quite bizarre.
And Brent Spiner has a great quote about it. He's referring to masks. He says, there was one that we thought was terrible while we were doing it. We were laughing at each other's faces at the acting we were doing in masks, but that is a fan favorite. I'm always hearing how fans love it. And let me tell you, we could not look at each other.
Okay.
Now, the fan favorite part, I have to call into question.
Yes.
And this was an episode before we revisited it for this podcast. I think we had kind of kicked around the idea of including it in a if we ever did Best Worst 3. There is no chance in hell I'm revisiting this episode for Best Worst 3.
Yeah, because, Jen, when we do, like, Best Worst episodes, they're at least entertaining episodes, like, even if there's, like, some sort of camp factor. I wasn't really, like, there's not...
There's camp. There's okay, a but, lot of camp.
But it was a boring episode.
Yes. It was boring as hell. Like, I was not entertained.
And I didn't care what happened.
No,
it's like,
I didn't.
This isn't interesting at all.
I didn't for an instant believe that the Enterprise was going to turn into an Aztec temple permanently.
No.
So, like, what's...
The crew seems pretty unflappable in the face of this, too.
They've been through worse.
They're like, eh, whatever.
They're like, there's a fire in main engineering. This happens all the time.
I like how the fire's always in the foreground. So you can tell they're just, like, holding some flames up to the camera lens.
It's literally a letter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, well, whatever.
But Spiner, I don't know. Like, I can appreciate that this was a challenge, you know, that he had all these different personalities that he had to portray. And I agree, they're distinct and they have, you know, their own voices. But to me, they just, largely probably due to the lack of preparation, there's nothing organic about them. They feel like an actor just like, okay, what's this one? Oh, okay, I don't really understand, but here's an old man voice. And, you know, if an actor doesn't understand the motivation or sort of the truth behind the moment they're acting in, which I seriously doubt anyone did shooting this episode, It just takes away from the overall impact. So I'm watching it, but I don't really care what's going on with Brent Spiner's performances, despite the fact that I'm sure he was working his butt off.
Well, Jen, you can admire the performances, certainly on like kind of, you know, on an objective level, but are you invested at all in these different characters that he's portraying?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Did any of them stand out to you as like the most interesting or the one that is the fun one to remember? Because I got to say, for me, no, none of them did.
I guess they tried to, what was it? Ehot? Is that the...
Which one's Ehot?
The jokester?
Is that Ehot?
The low-key kind of character? Yeah. It wasn't Misaka, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, this is not... Look, I praise Spiner as a performer. He was given, like, garbage water to work with here. And
this is an episode by Joe Manosky, who's pretty reliable.
Yeah, well... He has, so, I don't know, get into Voyager. He's got some stinkers in Voyager. Yeah. Anyway.
Would you say this is the worst episode of TNG?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, it's not an offensive episode, and there's so many offensive episodes of Next Generation. And there's so many episodes that are even more boring than this. We'll Always Have Paris, for example. I think. So.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't normally look to Wikipedia to be the expert on Star Trek. But for me in that moment, at least affirmed my mortification and how boring the episode was.
It had that much of an impact on you. You needed some sort of validation.
Okay.
I rarely watch an episode of Star Trek, and when it's over, like I don't feel confused. This episode, I felt confused throughout watching it.
Yeah.
It was like a fever dream.
Okay.
So,
well. Why don't we fast forward one last Android prototype to discuss, B4.
Everybody's favorite.
Star Trek Nemesis. Here's the thing.
They love lore, but this was the next best step.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this is the one, like, objectively bad performance that Brett Spiner has given.
Right.
We saw in Star Trek Insurrection that he was doing Data as a child. Mm-hmm. And this verges on, like, offensive in that he's doing Data as, like, a kind of a Forrest Gump sort of character, like a simpleton.
Yeah.
And it's, like, he's not Data as a child here. He is, Data is an android that's not quite as smart.
You know what I think, for me, the biggest problem with B4 is, and a lot of this has to do with the fact we just watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 the other night. And at the time of recording this. And I was thinking about, like, why does a character like Baby Groot work versus a character like B4? And I think it's because when you watch Guardians 2, they understand the function of why that character is there. He represents this naivety and innocence surrounded by cynical characters. What does B4 represent in the story of Nemesis?
Like cheap jokes.
That's the thing, right? There's no hook to this character. He doesn't really serve a function other than an easy exit to, you know, when Data sacrifices himself to say, no, he still lives on.
Yeah.
And we can have the Spock-like rebirth from Star Trek 3 where he just moans a lot, I guess. But to me, that's the problem, is that he's not a character.
No.
Lore has motivation. Dr. Soong has motivation. What does B4 have?
Nothing.
Yes.
Yeah, he's got lines like, why does a tall man have a furry face? Or...
Classic joke.
What's the punchline? No,
that
is
the punchline. That's the punchline. He looks at Riker and says, why does the tall man have a furry face? Or and when he's introduced to Picard, he says, why do you have a shiny head? And it's like, audiences are supposed to be like...
embarrassing.
...guffawing at this. And it's just like...
Yeah.
Okay, and Brent Spiner co-wrote Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah, like, this was, I suspect, his idea.
Yes, this was his baby.
And I think it's baffling because Brent Spiner was very vocal about wanting to leave Data behind, saying, like, look, I'm getting too old, I can't play this character anymore. And so what, he brings in another character to potentially replace Data?
Do you think that's, like, the studio mandating that?
Do you think the studio was passionate about more TNG movies?
If this one made money, they would have been.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a backdoor sort of thing, kind of like the coffin on the Genesis planet at the end of Star Trek 2.
Sure.
But I don't know. Like, you know, you've already separated the whole crew at the end of this movie. And so,
yeah, but you know what? For the next adventure, you could have brought Riker and Troy, you know, on the USS Titan to, you know, have fun. I don't know. This is not a good next gen... Star Trek movie, period.
No. And I think, you know, when we talk about the performance of Spiner, I mean, I just don't know how inspired Spiner was at this point to come up with new variations on Data.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 15 years
yeah.
into his cycle as Data? And it's like, let's do one more, Brent. What do you have for B4? And it's like, well, what if he's blank, I guess?
Yeah. It makes so much more sense to me that you would just bring, if this is the sort of the narrative thread and this parallel to Shinzon and Picard that you wanted to introduce.
Right.
Why not just bring back Lore?
Yeah, well, that's the big fan complaint is that, yeah, why not have Lore?
The universe is already set up for a return of Lore.
Yeah.
You know, he had been dismantled after Descent.
Yes.
You know, I should ask you guys this, you know, what did you guys think of Lore's ultimate demise? Well, not demise, but his disassembling in Descent Part 2. Was that kind of like a good way to end his arc?
I felt so. I'm a fan, full circle? Yeah, I'm a fan of the Descent two-parter.
Yep.
I think it's actually really strong, and I think it's a perfect exit for a character who was weirdly underutilized in TNG.
I think Michael Piller was not a fan of Lore,
yeah.
And it surprises me because I think he was put to good use, and he wasn't overused. And I'm wondering if there, as you say, Cam, there could have been more uses for him throughout the run of the series.
You'd think
so.
At least one or two more episodes.
Yeah, make him a once a season sort of character.
Yeah,
that's not too much.
If you can do a Q episode every season, you know, you could throw in a Lore one every season. Why not?
And I have to hand it to Brent Spiner, as always, for going, like, totally, like, method acting in Descent Parts 1 and 2 with the 8-pack that Lore has in that episode.
Brent Spiner hit the gym.
It was impressive. Yeah, what can I say? Okay, so B4 doesn't really work for us.
No, and I think the reason, ultimately, they probably didn't use Lore is just the fact that they didn't want to explain anything. And Stuart Baird, the director, really knew nothing about Star Trek.
Yeah, he called Geordi LaForge an alien.
Well, but, you know, it's just they probably didn't want to explain anything, and they wanted some sort of other Data, and, you know, it's just the movies versus the TV universe, where the TV universe thrives on canon and a certain amount of fan service, whereas the movies, they're like, nope, general audiences cut anything that they wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
So it was a different world back then, not as geek friendly.
I do appreciate that we do get all those kind of geeky shout outs in the Simon Pegg penned adventures now. So.
Yeah.
Alrighty, guys, why don't we wrap this up with a discussion, a little like a brief foray into one Dr. Eric Sung.
Yeah.
Again, a Caucasian Asian man for some reason.
Of course.
I don't know. We do get the return of Brent Spiner here. And I have to say, he's looking pretty badass in his golden years, is he not?
Yeah, and without any makeup. Well, other than standard stage makeup. But we don't see, this is the first performance of, you know, Brent Spiner, where he's not completely obscured with unwieldy makeup.
Yeah, you know, Jen, did you watch this one, Borderlands?
I did, yeah. It was actually really cool to see him.
And, you know,
full human form.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because, I mean, of course, you're familiar with Data. Were you that familiar with, like, what Brent Spiner looks like outside of the Data makeup?
Oh, I've seen him in other things. Okay. What else was he in? He's been in
other things. Phenomenon and Independence Day. And,
Independence Day, that's what I was thinking of. But yeah. Phenomenon, as you know, Tyler, was my favorite childhood movie.
I do.
Really?
For many, many years. Oh, yes. I absolutely love that
movie.
I had the soundtrack and everything.
She would sing Eric Clapton songs around that home all the time. Yeah.
It was great to see him. It was very, very cool. It was also the first Enterprise episode I've ever watched.
What did you make of Enterprise compared with Next Gen?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, certainly.
What did you make of the contrast between Dr. Noonien Sung versus Eric Sung?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Who's better looking?
Certainly the latter.
Right.
They were just completely different.
Wasn't the latter Noonien Sung?
Well, I was just going to leave that up to you to figure out.
Brent Spiner's going to be like crushed that you think that, but okay.
No, I thought it was really cool. I mean, he was totally different. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any of the backstory on the Eric character at all.
Well, this is his introduction. We've never seen him in the show before.
Not only that, but true to Brent Spiner's other performances, it wasn't supposed to be about him.
I know, it was Colonel Green, right?
Yeah, Colonel Green.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do you know how many generations are supposed to be between, I guess, knowing when Enterprise takes place between him and
Yeah, this would have been about
a famous doctor.
175-year difference.
Yeah, wasn't it great-grandfather?
Well, let's think about it, though, because if Noonien Soong is about 150 years old...
This Noonien Soong? It's a different name.
Yeah, he took on a different name.
That's how he got out of prison. He just, like, made a makeshift costume and got out of there.
Tons of makeup.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like... Okay, they never addressed kind of the if he was his grandfather. Like, how would they know
right.
In Enterprise time? I think you would have to say that this is, like, his son or his direct descendant then? Grandson then, right?
Maybe great-grandfather? Or do you think
grandfather? Not great. I think it'd have to be grandfather. Because okay. If Noonien Soong is 150 years old and there's about 175-year... difference between the NX-01 and the Enterprise D, then
right,
yeah, okay. Well, hey, Jen, thanks for illuminating that for us.
Oh, anytime.
Here.
And okay. Tyler, you know, and Jen, what did you think of the idea of wrapping this character into the augments? Which is the augments, of course, were like, you know, Khan Noon Singh. Was that an interesting angle to take on a character who is obviously related to, you know, someone very famous within the Trek mythos?
I think Colonel Green made sense for obvious reasons, yeah. You know, but by the fact that, look, you get to the end of this, spoiler alert, Jen, but this is a three-part kind of arc here.
Oh, okay.
And we have Eric Soong. He's kind of thinking, hey, you know what? Androids, that seems like an interesting thing
mm-hmm.
to take up. So, yes. You know, there's that thread there.
Right.
What do you figure, Jen?
Yeah, I thought
the connections between
foreshadowing for sure, at least with what I saw.
Yeah.
And how do you guys feel about Brent Spiner? He looking very similar to the Brent Spiner we see at cons as a character. Like, was there a certain novelty to seeing him play a character without that sort of mask?
Oh,
I thought so. It was like Wilson without the fence. I thought it was pretty that's true. It was pretty cool.
Oh, please God, let us use that to Brent Spiner at a con.
Yeah.
In Enterprise it was like Wilson without the fence.
And he still carries that smarm quite well with like, this is a character. I love that he took aim at Reed,
right?
Saying, I heard the name, just don't know the face. You need to get a better publicist at this point.
Is that a reference to Dominic Keating?
Perhaps.
Is that meta?
It may very well be.
Yeah.
But,
I like that he has some menace too, you know, kind of like Lore. Eric Soong is a little more threatening, which I liked, because Scott Bakula is a more physically imposing captain than, say, Patrick Stewart. No offense, Patrick Stewart.
How many times did Archer get beaten up in this one?
Well, that's true enough.
Twice?
Yeah.
Okay, anyways.
But when you pair Brent Spiner next to Scott Bakula, you could see, like, Brent Spiner was just, like, physically looked more imposing. In a way where it didn't feel like, you know, Scott Bakula towering over this quivering scientist.
I think part of it had to be that badass jacket that he got to wear throughout this. Like, I want that jacket.
Yeah,
that,
it's pretty cool.
Eric has, so.
Did you know when both of you watched this episode for the first time, that it would be Brent Spiner without any makeup or?
Yes.
I didn't know it. Like, I just went into Enterprise, you know, a handful of years ago, and I didn't know anything about the episode at all.
So were you pretty surprised?
Yeah, I was, I think. When I turned it on and just Brent Spiner just showed up as is, I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I actually, even though I wasn't watching Enterprise, I stopped watching it at around season two, I was still following, like, what were the big news stories and the fact that Brent Spiner was going to be returning. I was totally aware that it was going to be Brent Spiner as, you know, his... It was sans makeup, essentially.
Was it a big news story when he was cast on Enterprise? Or at that point, the show, I think, was running on fumes a bit. So was it kind of like...
Oh, no, it was in the New York Times.
Was it?
No.
Oh, okay.
You asked if it was a big news story.
Front page?
Yeah. No. It was, look, I was still following like the Star Trek news sites and everything. And
Were fans excited or was it
That's what I was asking. I'd think that fans would get pretty excited.
I think when it came to Enterprise, like I was among the fans that had just kind of given up on the franchise and it just felt like it had been, it had run out of fumes. Even though, I wish I had tuned in because I enjoyed this three-parter.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, me too. It's one of my favorites of the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we look back at sort of the history of Brent Spiner performances, fans are always going to go to Lore, I think, and Dr. Soong as the primary standouts, obviously, aside from Data. But do you think like Eric Soong is underrated in that regard? Is it just a victim of the series that he appears on?
Yes, I think that's a very good observation there. Because think about it, he has Noonien only appeared in 2 episodes, Lore just 4.
Yeah.
So he's kind of right in between the number, just episode count, screen time. I think he has a lot more screen time than Noonien Soong. So I think it's a good performance. It's a distinct performance. It doesn't feel as if I'm seeing just another version of Noonien Soong Lore or before. Thank the heavens.
Yeah, he has a lot of personality on his own, which I appreciated. Because at this point in the franchise, you know, Brent Spiner could have easily just been like, yeah, I'll show up and do a couple episodes. I don't really care.
I'll just phone in the lines.
Yeah, like, why not? Sure.
How do you think they got him to do that? Like, what do you think the genesis was of writing they had to have had him agree to it before he...
Yes. Well, no, they originally had the story arc plotted out with an entirely different character who was introduced in the original series.
Oh, okay, and wasn't related to... Noonien.
It was a different character, in the original series, who was like a genocidal World War III militia member or leader. And Brent Spiner was interested, and they decided, I think it was the network was pushing for it, because Manny Coto was kind of, I think, a little bit...
He wanted to do the Colonel Green
story.
He
was really fixated on making Colonel Green a bigger figure in the franchise. But it was just decided, well, okay, we'll put him in this 3-parter.
But, I mean, look, Brent Spiner, he's friends with Rick Berman. He co-wrote Star Trek Nemesis. He's got an in when it comes to getting involved with the franchise.
When Data calls, you accept the charges.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just like that episode where it was featuring Phantasms, you know. Right? Is that your reference, Cam?
That's exactly it. The phone in the chest.
Okay. Well, Cam.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Tyler, where can we be found?
Yeah, go to facebook.com/subspacepod. That's facebook.com/subspacepod, or just search Subspace Transmissions in the search bar on Facebook. Guys, we're posting exclusive content there, like exclusive podcast episodes as well as videos. You can keep up to date with some of our thoughts on some of the big news coming out Star Trek Discovery. We're not, you know, flooding people's feeds. Jenna, you've liked us on Facebook. Are we flooding your feed?
You're absolutely not flooding my feed.
But are we giving you valuable content at the same time?
Absolutely.
Okay, so...
You are flooding my feed, but you're my only friend, so...
I get updates at home about your Facebook feed. Charlene has liked it as well.
Yeah.
And as is Brett, so we have a whole house full of people, and... We talk about it, but I don't think it's because you're flooding the feeds.
I appreciate that. But yeah, for listeners, like, honestly, it's a free podcast. All we're asking is that you just push like or follow us on Facebook, and it'll make Cam and I go to bed easier every night.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we are covering Star Trek's most iconic moments for the second time. We tried doing it in one podcast, and we realized that we got through, what, maybe 16 iconic moments, and an hour plus had already been filled.
Right.
And we've decided we're going to do about 4 of these episodes.
I think so. It's kind of create our own little canon over a series of episodes.
Yeah, so we're talking about the most iconic things. What was one of the examples that we used last time? I talked about nuclear vessels.
Yeah, and we talked about like the Shatner Khan scream.
Khan! That sort of stuff. So we're talking about, you know, I am Locutus of Borg. You know,
right.
Believe me, there's so much left to cover here. We may have to do 8 episodes altogether, Cam.
We can only hope.
We can only hope. But yeah, tune in for Most Iconic Episodes Part 2. That'll be a fun one. And Cam, where can we find you on the Twitter?
I'm at Cam V as in Voracious Appetite for Poison Berry Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTONN as in Noonien would never eat poison berries.
And Geneva.
I'm not on Twitter.
Well, what about us? Other social media? Where would we find you on, say, Instagram?
Friendster.
Yeah. What's your home address?
Yeah, I got nothing for you guys. Wow. Sorry. Yeah.
You can find her if you just go into Ask Jeeves and search her name.
Yeah.
Alta Vista.
Web crawler.
Hotbot. Speaking of Hotbot, this is the episode about.
Yeah, it is.
That's Data's spider robots. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Data's nickname back at the Academy.
That's right.
I don't know why I couldn't get a date for Sadie Hawkins, but there you go.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.